You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Watson. Welcome to Newsmakers. We have a lot going on today. Richard Justice, a regular on the show, talks about the Indians' amazing winning streak and the Dodgers' most recent slump. We also have twin center fielder Byron Buxton, and he talks about his amazing second half. Also visited the Nationals, who won the NL East title recently. I had great conversations with Sean Doolittle, Anthony Rendon, and Charlie Slows. I also had a brief conversation with manager Dusty Baker, who guided the team to their second consecutive division title. I also saw the Reds. I had great conversations with Joey Votto, Zach Hozart, and Scooter Jeanette. We start with Richard Justice, who is impressed with what the Indians have done. On the phone is one of the best baseball writers in America. His name is Richard Justice. He's a columnist for MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Richard, I got to start off by talking about the Dodgers. They finally broke their 11-game losing streak. I got to ask you, what happened?
Everything happened. You know, normally during the course of a season, really good teams only have two of three things working. The bullpen's rotation and offense. For a lot of this season, when they were 93-36, the Dodgers had it all rolling. You know, you and I would talk about the National League MVP race, and we'd go through Rendon and Stanton, and we would always say, and half the Dodgers.
Right.
Everything broke at once. I mean, everything broke at once. Now, they had some injuries, but it was inexplicable. Going forward, the worry is this. Okay, Kershaw won last night. So you're going to give the ball to Kershaw in game one. You got a good, you feel good about that, regardless of who he goes against, Strasburg, Scherzer, whoever. The problem is after that. I mean, Darvish has been terrible. Alex Wood looks like he's hit a wall, you know, in his young career. Rich Hill has been up and down. I don't know what you do. I mean, the plan was Kershaw, Darvish, you know, whoever, figure it out. So I think the key for them postseason-wise is they got to get Darvish fixed. And if they get him fixed, you know, if you can go into a postseason series with Kershaw and Darvish, and Yu Darvish has a history of, you know, the stuff is good, the stuff is there, and he has a history of being, you know, being unable to control his stuff. That's the key for these final 18, 19 days of the regular season for them.
You know, it looked like the Dodgers were going to go into the postseason with the best record. And now suddenly the Nationals could have the best record, and there's an important weekend series coming up. How do you see that?
Yeah, it is. You know, right now in the National League, the teams you fear the most in October would be, in some order, the Diamondbacks, the Cardinals, and maybe number one on the list, the Nationals, because Strasburg, and you've seen him a lot more than me, he's never pitched better than he's pitching right now.
Correct.
And Scherzer's ERA is lower than in his Cy Young Award a year ago. And that lineup is really deep now. And the bullpen, Mike Rizzo fixed the bullpen. And like we talked about, you add those three guys, and suddenly you put Albers in a different role. You put some of those other guys, Oli Perez and some of those guys, in a different role. It's a really good bullpen. I know the results haven't been perfect. They got to get Bryce Harper on the field. Harper changes their whole lineup. Harper changes the playoffs, you know, and it's always like, okay, you know, you get these, nobody's saying anything. Bryce, Mike Rizzo, they're not saying anything bad, but they're not saying anything good. They're just saying he's coming along. Well, you know, he's still got, I guess it would be 3 weeks. He's still got 3 weeks to get back on. And, you know, knowing him, he doesn't even have to play a rehab assignment or anything. He just got to go play. You would trust him. He's still going to create fear on the other side. But yeah, that's it now. But, you know, I don't even know if St. Louis is going to make it, but nobody's playing better than St. Louis right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tommy Pham has really carried that team, too. He's the MVP of that team.
Yeah, you know, and that's what they did. That's what the Cardinals did. They didn't make any big trades. You know, they traded away Mike Leake, and that may free up money for Lance Lynn next year. But what they did, they kept dipping into their farm system. Paul DeJong, Tommy Pham, this Harrison Bader guy, and just said, okay, we feel good about the depth of our farm system, and where we thought it would be, we'd be built around Piscotty, Grichuk, and the older guys. It hasn't been. And now what's scary is Molina is hitting, Fowler is hitting, Carpenter is hitting, and those young guys are contributing, and they're scoring runs in bunches. So Waka's coming off a really good game. They go into the postseason in some order, Carlos Martinez, Lance Lynn, Michael Waka. Hey, that's good enough to win. And you know, not be it's hard not to root for them because, you know, Mike Matheny catches all kinds of hell there. And it's like every movie makes it backfires. They play gotcha with the guy. And, you know, just when we thought the Cubs were about to close it out, they haven't been able to do it.
Not at all. You're right about that. Let's talk about the Indians. Now, obviously, as we record this, they're on a 20-game winning streak. Are they that good, Richard?
Yeah, I think on opening day, you would have said they're the closest thing to a complete team in baseball. They're doing this without their secret weapon, Andrew Miller. I mean, secret weapon's not the right word. Like this monster weapon that Tito Francona made him out of. But they have everything. I mean, Tito's going to have decisions to make on the playoff rotation because everybody's been good. Trevor Bauer, Clevenger. I mean, I guess they're going to go Kluber, Carrasco, and then figure it out from there. But everybody has been. I mean, the rotation is on one of the great runs any team has ever been on. They have Shaw and Allen to close it out. You know, Jose Ramirez, that Tito said last year, we didn't expect him to contribute last year. You asked Tito about him last year in the postseason. He said, well, here was his role this year. He saved our butts.
Right.
And because, with Brantley hurt, with other guys struggling, he came in. And so he's been a monster. I mean, he may, you know, you and I talk about the AL MVP race. Where does Judge fit in? Where does Altuve fit in? Well, Jose Ramirez is going to be on everybody's radar. And Jay Bruce he's Jay Bruce again, the Jay Bruce we saw in Cincinnati. And this young man, Francisco Lindor, might end up being the face of the game. You know, we talk about this all the time, but that smile, the way he plays, the excitement he brings, and the fact that the guy just seems to have, there's a certain joy to the guy. I mean, they are a fun baseball team to watch right now.
No question.
And, Bill, one other thing about the Indians is, for the last 10 years, they've been a model franchise. They weren't always winning, but there's a reason they were the cradle of general managers. If you look at the Mike Hazen in Arizona, I'm going to leave somebody out. Mike Hazen in Arizona,
right.
David Stearns in Milwaukee, Neil Huntington in Pittsburgh. I know I'm leaving guys out. And then if you extend it to the John Hart family tree that went through Cleveland, you can find probably 12 guys that worked for Mark Shapiro in Cleveland. You know, they just did things right. He hired good people. He empowered them. He trusted them. And, you know, they went through a tough period. When Mark took over, they'd won 5 or 6 division titles. But the payroll was going in a direction that they couldn't sustain.
Right.
And they've done it. You know, the most impressive thing about this team is not the fact that they drafted and signed guys like Lindor. It's that they made minor league trades for Brantley, for Kluber. When they saw guys like Casey Blake getting older, they moved aggressively, didn't mess around. Sabathia, they didn't mess around. They went, and a big part of their team is guys that they acquired as minor league free agents.
What about the Twins? I mean, one minute we thought they were out of it, and now they're back in it. And if the season ended today, they would make the postseason. How do you explain them?
I don't explain it. I don't know how to explain it because they're running kids out there. They're running a rotation out there that it's Irv Santana and some guys. And they're not playing particularly great now. But and Buxton's kind of gone silent. Sano is not even there. But they figure a way out to win, you know. I mean, if they make the postseason, Paul Molitor is going to be the AL Manager of the Year, with apologies to Tito, by miles, you know, and Mike Socia is going to be in that mix if they make it. But it's, you know, I can't explain it. When you watch them, you just say these are, like, they're running 25-year-old guys out there along with Maurer and a couple of guys like that. But, and Dozier has started to hit.
Right.
I guess it's just like whatever they have to do on a certain night, they are able to do. Can they sustain it over 162 games? Well, they've sustained it so far.
No question. But I got to ask you this, though. If they make the postseason, do you think the Twins will re-sign Molitor as manager?
No question. I think he's back anyway, even though Derek Falvey and Thad Levine did not hire him. He's done a great job. I mean, and yeah, I think he's back. And I thought you were going to ask me, would they re-sign Irv Santana? And that's the thing about the Twins, you know. So they're going to, let's say they play the Yankees in the wild card game. Okay, the Yankees probably start Severino. That's pretty good. But in a postseason, in a winner-take-all, there are not many people you trust more than Irv Santana.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to talk about the Diamondbacks a minute. You know, that's one team that scares me of all the National League teams. And what do you think about them?
Yeah, because Greinke's going to pitch the wild card game, I would think. And then Robbie Ray's going to pitch game one against the Dodgers. And he has a history of beating them. And their lineup is really good. Archie Bradley's emerged as an Andrew Miller-type weapon at the back of the bullpen. They've gotten more out of Fernando Rodney than probably you and I thought was there to be gotten.
Yes, I thought he was
But that
dumb.
Lineup is good. When you run Pollock out there and Goldschmidt and you add J.D. Martinez to it, that lineup is really good. And it just comes down to, okay, what kind of role are you going to be on? You're going to run Greinke, Patrick Corbin, Robbie Ray, one other guy. You know, they've gotten some – Zach Godley has been really good. It's that's the thing about this season. There's all these things happen that we never saw coming. On opening day, did we see the Diamondbacks and Rockies both making the playoffs, the Twins making the playoffs? It's funny, the division races, it looks like the favorites may hold serve right across the board, 6-6. But the wild card has been chaotic, and the American League wild card is still chaotic.
No question. I want to talk about Shohei Ohtani. He's the Japanese player who could be playing in the big leagues next year. He's a pitcher and a hitter. What do you think about him, and do you think he's going to be a good player?
Yeah, and I do think he's going to pitch and hit. And I think we're at a point now where you have these young guys in charge of front offices that realize all the ways we thought about the game for 100 and whatever years, we're going to take a different look because there are guys coming in. You know, the Dodgers were going to make my boy Brett Eibner a pitcher this year. He's an outfielder, but he pitched at Arkansas and played center field. They were going to do that. There were a couple of two-way players drafted. And so now it's not, will it happen? It is going to happen. And what you hear, the debate is now, okay, should we DH him? Can we play him at first? What do you do the day before he pitches? How do you handle all of that? Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody seeing him thinks he's going to be a great starting pitcher, but a major league starting pitcher, no question about it. And how does his bat play? And, you know, everyone that's seen him thinks his bat will play in the major leagues, you know, mm-hmm. and that's a change. You know, I don't think guys thought Ichiro's bat would play, and it played better than almost anybody ever.
Correct.
And Matsui and all those guys. So, yeah, and it's going to be quite a bidding. You know, like I know the Rangers, for instance, they think there are teams that are going to go all in, and because of the international signing bonus pool, there's a limit to what they can pay for him. But it's going to be exciting, and I think that stuff, like I was with Darvish that first spring, tons of Japanese reporters around. I just think that buzz that follows a guy like that, that's good for the sport.
Richard Justice, listen, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bill.
My next guest is Byron Buxton of the Twins, and he explains why he's the best center fielder in the major leagues during the second half of the season.
On the phone is the best center fielder in baseball, and I mean that. His name is Byron Buxton of the Minnesota Twins. Byron, thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Byron, how do you explain your turnaround at the plate? It started in the second half. The first half wasn't so good, but now you're putting up what you call superstar numbers. What happened at the plate?
No, I was able to slow the game back down and go back to something that I've been doing since high school to simplify things. And it kind of felt more comfortable to me, got a little bit more confidence with it. And the more at-bats I got with, you know, going back to being myself, to being what I used to be in my younger days, the better I start feeling. And when you start getting that feeling of, you know, things are starting to turn around, you start getting that confidence and comfortability in the batter's box to, you know, anything that you feel is close to the plate, you can put a good swing on and hit the ball hard somewhere. And I started feeling that way, and things just kind of turned for me then.
I noticed the biggest thing that you do now is that you choke up. How much has choking up on the bat has helped?
It helped a lot, you know, especially with the balls on the outside that sometimes I'm missing because my bat head's dropping a little bit. Now I'm able to have a little bit more bat control, and, you know, also that allows me to be a little bit more shorter to the ball and, you know, put the ball in play a little bit more and also not miss those pitches that I should hit.
Now, you were the number one prospect for several years, and before this year, were you putting a lot of pressure on yourself to hit home runs? Because I noticed with your swing before you started choking up and everything, to me, it looked like you were trying to hit home runs. Were you putting pressure on yourself?
I was a little bit, you know, especially with the way that I started the season off. It was very frustrating to begin that way. So, you know, I just had to dig deep down and know that my teammates and coaches in front office had my back to, you know that things are going to turn around. And that's when in my head I started trusting myself, believing in myself, you know, that I belong to play here and things would turn around. And once I installed that in my head and realized, you know, that the confidence is there, the comfortability is there, it's just me going out there having fun and playing and letting the game come back to me, everything else would have worked out.
Byron, I got to ask you this. You know, you talked about the front office and the coaching staff. How good was it knowing that you got off to a slow start, they still had your back?
It's very good, you know. Right about 2 weeks into the season, you know, with the way I was starting, I was already the mindset of getting sent down to AAA was starting to seek in a little bit more. And then, you know, they just kind of talked to me and told me that, you know, you're going to be here. Things going to turn around. Keep battling. Keep going out there being yourself. And once I heard that, you know, it put a different feeling into the way that you feel about the game, the way that you go about your business. And, you know, I kind of right then the pressure kind of got took off of me a little bit and I stopped worrying about, you know, the negative things of the game. I started worrying more about the positives and learning something new every day, trying to help me out, help the team out, and help us out in any way I can to win.
Byron, your defense is out of this world. And can you tell me how you learn how to play defense? Your routes are outstanding, and it seems like you make easy catches. You make the hard plays look easy. And could you explain that?
That just comes with a lot of reps. I know when I was a little bit younger, me and my dad used to go and take me to a ball field, and you know, he'll hit me some balls in the infield and he'll hit me some balls in the outfield. And I was always the one that would like to dive. I like to get dirty. So I tell him to hit me some in the gap and I just try to run and lay out for him. And that's really how I started, you know, falling in love with the outfield. The more that I got the opportunity to go out there and play it and have a lot of fun doing it and realize that I love taking away base hits. I love, you know, diving for balls, catching balls like that. It kind of settled into me to work hard to try to be the best that I can be out there.
There was a point this year where it looked like your team was out of it, but especially after you traded Garcia and Kinsler, and now you guys are back in it. And if the season ends today, you guys would make the playoffs. And what did you guys say that made you play well, and also what did you say as far as we're still in this?
No, we kind of had a meeting amongst ourselves to right there after all this trades or whatever, you know, to not let those things affect us, to keep going out there battling and competing pitch by pitch, and that's what allowed us to not, you know, get down on ourselves. You know, it kind of put a chip on our shoulder that we just lost couple of brothers that meant a lot to us. So it kind of fueled a fire to not only, you know, play for this team, play for the city, you know, but also play for them, because, you know, they had a special moment here as well and had special places in our heart. So, you know, we kind of took that and turned it into fuel to keep us going.
What can you say about Paul Molitor? He's had you guys in this playoff race all year long.
Incredible, you know, it's definitely one of one of the best people I've been around, you know, not just on the baseball field, but off the baseball field. He's one that you want to pick his brain, you want to ask questions, and you know, he's always there for you. He always got your back. He always wants to help you get better, and you know, that's all you can ask for. The character that he shows, it builds us up. It builds us up as a team to have that team chemistry together, have quality at bats during the game, have good defense. It allows us to go out there and play freely and have fun playing baseball.
What's the key to the rest of the season, though? What do you guys have to do to go to the postseason?
Just keep doing what we're doing. You know, we not playing with no pressure at all, not looking at any other team. We focused on what we can control, and we're going out there playing the game one pitch at a time. And we're having a lot of fun. You know, we're out there smiling, having fun, and that's when we play the best baseball, when we as a group can go out there and put together, you know, great at-bats after great at-bats and play good defense and have the fun that we do. It allows us to play freely. It allows us to, you know, our teammates to not feel the pressure if somebody don't get a job done. You got all the confidence throughout this team.
Byron Buxton, listen, thank you so much for being on the show. It was great having you.
Thank you.
We go to Washington, and my first conversation is with Sean Doolittle, the Nationals closer. And let me tell you, he saved the Nationals season.
Sean Doolittle, thank you so much for being on the show. First of all, congratulations on a great season. You're the big difference why this team is, you know, going to win another division title. What do you think of your season so far?
You know, I think I've been happy with it. I've been happy with how I've been able to contribute since coming over here. A lot gets made of the trade, but I'm just a really small part of it. If you consider the job that Madsen's done, you consider the job that Kinsler's done since coming over here, and then you think about some of the other additions like Edwin coming over, Howie coming over. We've had, I think, one of the best things about this team is that we've had contributions from a lot of different guys here in the second half that have helped put us in a really good spot.
Now, since you've been in the National League, tell me the adjustments you've had to make after coming from the American League.
I've tried to keep a lot of things the same. You know, I'm learning these hitters for the first time. They're seeing me for the first time. So I'm trying to stick to my strengths and not overcomplicate things. I've trusted Wieters and Lobatone behind the plate because they know these hitters a lot better than I do up to this point. I have noticed that teams tend to match up a little bit more. I tend to face a lot more pinch hitters over here. But at the end of the day, when you're trying to nail down big outs late in the game, it's still a dogfight.
You've been getting most of the closure situations, and I just wanted to know, is that what you expected when you came here?
No, I didn't know what to expect. I know that when I was in Oakland, Madsen and I had chopped up save situations based on lefties versus righties, and we would kind of play the matchups. If the lefties came up in the eighth inning, I would get the eighth, and he would close it out in the ninth, and vice versa. So I think I wasn't exactly sure what to expect, but the first night I got over here, I got a save opportunity and was able to lock it down, and I've been in that role ever since. But I think I've pitched in every situation that you can think of from like the sixth inning on this year. So I feel comfortable in a number of different situations. I think that all helps when you're in a save situation.
How much do you like D.C.?
I love it. It's an awesome city. I haven't gotten a chance to get out and explore too much because things have been so busy since we came over. But the fans here, the stadium have been awesome. It's been really cool. The stadium's amazing. The organization seems it's first class. I couldn't be happier.
The fans really like you.
I'm glad. I want to stay on the good side.
The team has been in the postseason for the last six seasons. What will make this one so different? I know you weren't there the previous three, but what will make this one so different? What do you like about this team?
I really like our depth. I think a lot of people around the league they know about you know, the big names in this room, and rightfully so. They know about guys like Bryce and Murph and Zim and Rendon, and they know about Max and Straws and Gio. And but I think what we had to go through with the number of injuries that we had and having to have other guys come in and step up, and have done an awesome job, guys like Goody and Defoe and Howie and Edwin and Lind, and guys that have gotten, you know, kind of thrust into everyday roles there for a while, that were really helping us win ball games. And I think when it comes time to the postseason, having that depth, having had guys get consistent playing time and make big contributions, I think that's really going to help us.
Now, I've read quite a bit about you doing some research, and I noticed that you were a hitter in college. You were a first baseman. I got to ask, why did you give that up to become a pitcher? Please explain.
I had gotten drafted as a hitter, and in 2009, I started having knee trouble. I was in AAA already, and I could hit, man. I could hit. I know a lot of pitchers like to say that, but I could swing it. I was selected to play in the Arizona Fall League. I was added to the 40-man roster as a hitter. I ended up having two knee surgeries. I missed all of 2009 and 2010, and then I tore a tendon in my wrist. I missed 2011. The organization, the A's, came to me and asked if I would be willing to start a throwing program to get my shoulder in shape in case that they had to activate my insurance plan. That's what they jokingly called it, because I pitched in college. And so I started doing that, and one thing led to another. The wrist didn't really heal. I was looking at a pretty complicated surgery with a long rehab process, so I asked to switch. I pitched the last game of the rookie ball season in 2011, and by June of 2012, I was in Oakland.
It's really worked out for you. You gotta like what you did.
You know, it's not the way that I envisioned getting to the big leagues, for sure, but I think that path and having to go through that has really helped me a lot.
I understand you're big on charity work. Talk about what you do.
My fiance and I are very involved in a lot of military charities. We both come from military families. We work with an organization called Operation Finally Home that gives mortgage-free homes to wounded veterans and their families. We worked with an organization called Swords to Plowshares that helps. It's kind of a one-stop shop for veterans to allow them to access kind of pro bono legal help when trying to navigate VA claims and benefits and housing and jobs and employment opportunities. And then we also have worked pretty extensively with an advocacy group here in DC called High Ground Veterans Advocacy that really gets in on a policy level and advocates on veterans' behalf. We've done some other stuff as well, but the veterans' issues are probably the thing we spend the most time and energy on.
The World Series. Winning the World Series means what to you?
That's tough for me to put into words because, you know, it's a goal that every player has. It's a goal that every player has had since they were a little kid. And I've been in the playoffs three times. I've never made it out of the first round.
Nor has this team.
So, I mean, to think about the World Series right now, I mean, it would mean everything to get to be able to accomplish that. That's the biggest thing you can accomplish in this sport. I really think we have the team to do it. But for now, I think we're all trying to keep our blinders on and not look too far ahead. I know that's kind of cliche to say, but, you know, with the history here and you know, still so much baseball left to play. I think we're really just focused on wrapping this thing up and gearing up for the playoffs.
And my final question is, does it bother you that I noticed, I watched the Masson post-game show, and I noticed that they called you Dr. Doolittle. Does that bother you?
No. No, I mean, that's a nickname that I've had for a really long time. And when I was in college, Doc was my nickname. I still have friends and people that I know from my time at UVA that still call me Doc. I was due when I was with the A's, when I was in the Oakland organization. But no, it doesn't bother me at all. I think it's kind of fun, and I've been hearing it for a long time, so I'm used to it.
Sean Doolittle, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, man.
My next guest is Anthony Rendon. He has a chance to win the NL MVP. Here's what he had to say about it.
Hey, Anthony, this is a great year for you. This is your best year. You've had good years before, but what made this year so great?
I'm not sure. If I knew the answer, I'd try to have good years all the time.
Yeah.
But I think just continuing this, to listen to my coaches, to listen to teammates, listening to friends, and just being open to new things. That's really what it's about, and trying to get better each and every day. We have, I think this is the most veteran team that we've had all year. And it feels like everyone at least has 10 years, or we've had a good amount of guys hit their 10-year mark this year. So just trying to learn from them, and I've only had 4 or 5 years in the league, so just trying to continue to learn and grow every day.
What about Dusty Baker? How much has he helped your career? He seemed like he was really interested in you the moment he got here.
Yeah, definitely. That's another thing. You're going to learn from one of the guys that's been around baseball a long period of time. He's played a good amount of years, and he has actually managed a good amount of years. He's managed some lower class guys, yeah. And then he's managed some Hall of Famers. So he's been up and he's been down. So why not take advantage and learn from one of the greatest?
I want to ask you this. The season for you started when you had the 10 RBI game. And talk about that game and just flowed from there.
What's crazy is that I felt just as bad that game that I had, the previous entirety of April. So, I don't know whatever it was. I actually happened to see the ball that game, or something just clicked. And so I just went with it, I guess. I don't know.
Now, everyone now is talking about you being the MVP now. And I know you, Anthony. That's why I call you Pop, because I know you don't talk about yourself, but you are in serious consideration for MVP, and you got to feel good about it.
Hey, we just try to win ball games. That's all that matters. That's personal accolades will come in the end.
Yeah. And now talk about this team. You were there in 14, 16. Can this team go far this time?
I don't know. We'll see. Every year is a new year. That's what's awesome about it. We're not worried about the past. We have a different group of guys, the 25 guys that are here. And so we'll see what we can do.
My next guest is manager Dusty Baker. And let me tell you, he wants his Nationals to have the best record in baseball by season's end.
Dusty, how important is that? First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
How important is the best record? You guys have a chance for that now.
I know we do.
How important?
Well, it's important because, you don't want to go to L.A. no 2 or 3 times.
Right.
Because you see what happened when we came back from L.A. We it was a little tough on our bodies. And, a month ago, people were talking, say, hey, man, let's get do better than the Cubs because you're not going to catch L.A. And I didn't say anything, but I said, hey, I thought in my mind you never know what can happen. And, you go on a losing streak and the opposition, and you go on a winning streak. Next thing you know, you're right here with them. And Houston looked like they were miles ahead.
Right.
Of us at the same time.
You passed them.
Yeah. So if you got the lead, you want to keep the lead. So we just want some momentum. We're getting some guys back healthy. And, it sure would be great to get Jason Worth back 100%, to get Goody back, Bryce Harper back. These are big keys to our club,
Do you think they'll be ready?
I don't know. We'll see. Our training fitness staff is doing all they can, to get them ready.
This team is better. I think the best Nationals team ever.
Really?
I do.
Okay.
What do you think? And can this team go past that first round?
Oh, yeah. I definitely so. But we need our main horses, So we'll see. And I hope that people hope and pray that, we get healthy.
Congratulations, Dusty.
Thank you.
My next guest is Charlie Sloves, and he believes the team can go far in the playoffs.
On the phone is one of the best broadcasters in baseball. His name is Charlie Sloves. He's the voice of the Nationals. You can hear him on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Charlie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Anytime, Bill.
Charlie, the Nationals had their share of injuries this year, and they were able to win the division. Why were they able to win the division, you think?
Well, I think they knew going in they had a great chance to win the division, and certainly the teams behind them did not play, in the case of the Mets, who some thought would challenge or even could win the division, had their share of injuries and certainly had a down year, so much so they're under .500 behind both the Braves and the Marlins in the National League East. So the Nationals, certainly the division was there for the taking. They were able to survive a lot of their injuries because most of them were not pitching injuries. Position player injuries, guys in and out of the lineup, that certainly affected their depth. The key position player injuries until recently, of course, Bryce Harper going out in August with the injury to his left knee and the left calf that they hope he'll be able to recover from and get back shortly before the postseason. But Jason Worth going down in early June, trying to get back now. He was hit by a pitch in the left shoulder on his rehab in the minor leagues and still trying to recover from that. So that's limited the amount of time he's been able to play since he's come off the disabled list. Of course, Trey Turner was out for almost 2 months with a fractured left wrist, but he's come back and pretty much picked up where he left off in June. Also, Michael Taylor was out for an extended period with an oblique strain for about 6 weeks. Brian Goodwin, who filled in so ably for him, well, he's hurt now with a groin strain and may not be available in the postseason. Wilmer Defoe stepped in, took over at shortstop for a two-month period of time when it could have been Stephen Drew filled in that spot. But Drew got hurt again. He's been on the disabled list a couple of times. So Wilmer Defoe, who had very limited time and experience the big leagues last year, proved to be invaluable. He's hitting around 280. He was an everyday player for a couple of months. And now the Nationals are trying to figure out how they would use him on a postseason roster, but he certainly has value. And those are the reasons that the Nationals have been able to withstand the injuries. And of course, the other big thing, the issue was the back of the bullpen, and Mike Rizzo solved that with a couple of trades, the big one getting Manson and Doolittle together in the deal for Oakland, and then getting Brandon Kinsler right before the July 31st deadline from the Twins.
Wow. Charlie, I got to ask you, talk about the job Dusty Baker did. I mean, even when things were going badly with the bullpen, he didn't panic. How do you explain the job he did?
I mean, Dusty is beloved by players everywhere he's been. The only thing he hasn't done is won at all. Get to the postseason and hopefully have better luck and his players stay healthy and are able to perform to their level. But this is a guy who is a Hall of Fame caliber manager with the time he has spent managing the big leagues and the amount of victories he's piled up with several different clubs. And you're right. He's a player's manager. The young players, the veteran players, all of them, he never seems to get flustered about what goes on. He's seen, he's heard everything there is as a player and a manager. And still, after all these years as a manager, he's able to reflect back to what it was like as either a very young player coming to the big leagues, a young veteran player who's traded and changed teams, or veteran players near the end of his career, because he's done all of it. And to him, it's still all fresh in his mind.
You know, Mike Rizzo has done everything he could to make this team a world championship team, and dating back to 2009. And I got to tell you, Charlie, I thought this year was maybe his best year as a general manager. Would you agree?
Well, I know you and I talked early in the year, and you didn't think this team had enough. Certainly, with the way the bullpen had its struggles trying to finish out games, you thought there was no chance, even if they win the division, that they could get beyond a division series. He didn't panic. He didn't get the guy he really wanted the offseason. The one they really put up the big dollars for was Kenley Jansen of the Dodgers. They made an effort to sign Mark Melanson, but not to the extent that the Giants went in terms of years and dollars to sign him. And so if they weren't going to get the guy that they wanted, the A or the B, they weren't going to shell that money out for just anybody. And so he thought that he'd be able to see how the bullpen performed with what they put together coming out of spring training. And if not, try and go out and improve the bullpen during the season. And, he jumped early. He did not wait for the July 31st deadline for fear the price could go up and he may not get who he wanted. And I know he's been lauded by other people in the game. Doolittle's had an injury history, but he's still only 30. Manson is like a second career at age 36, 37. And Doolittle is, a story, it's like a Kurt Warner story. I won't go as far as putting, shelving boxes in a grocery store. But this was a guy who spent 3.5 years pitching in the independent league. And usually when that happens, those guys don't make it back to the big leagues. They don't get the opportunity. And when you talk to someone like a Brandon Kinsler or even an Adam Lind, who Dusty Baker to this day say it's amazing that, he can't figure out how he hit .223 last year, whatever it was for Seattle, or how he was sitting out all winter without a club to play for when the Nationals signed him. And so you could ask Dusty Baker about his general manager and what he's done to improve the club in the course of the year and the signings that he made in the last minute. Even a Matt Wieters, you know, anyone could have signed him over the winter and didn't. Maybe he's not the offensive player he was a few years ago, but the pitchers love his game calling, how he receives them. And he's done wonders for Gio Gonzalez behind the plate this year.
No doubt about it. You know what, Charlie? We've seen the Nationals win 4 division titles. Can this year be different? Can they go past that first round?
Well, I think this is a more experienced club than any of the others that they've had. If you look back at, say, 2012, that team was probably ahead of what they had planned to get to the point that they did. And so you had some veteran players, was still a very young team in terms of first chance in the postseason. They didn't win the division series against the Cardinals. With the Giants, they thought they had the team. Maybe the bullpen turned about it to be inexperienced. They hoped they had enough starting pitching in that series. They just didn't. They outscored the Giants in the series, but not in the right times to win the games,
right,
and lost that series. And of course, last year, when you lose Wilson Ramos right before the postseason, and you don't have Steven Strasburg. And still, I mean, you're talking about such a close series with the Dodgers in 5 games that could have gone either way in Game 5, and they had that one bad inning when Max came out of the game and Dusty had to use 6 relievers and turned the game around, and Kershaw came out of the bullpen to get the save in the 9th inning on one day's rest after pitching 2 days prior. So, I mean, those were extenuating circumstances, maybe. I think this team feels they've learned from it. And if they have all their horses, Bryce Harper's able to come back, and this team is, if not, or close to 100% healthy when the postseason starts, with the experience and the additions in the bullpen and the way they have performed this year, I think they feel like they have all the ingredients, all the pieces to have a deep run in the postseason.
I tell you what's impressed me about this Nationals team. I think they have a bench now. I mean, I think they have a great bench compared to the other three. And I love Howie Kendrick, Adam Lynn. Oh, my God. I think there's no easy out on that bench now.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even talk about Howie Kendrick. It's another acquisition by Mike Rizzo from the Phillies. Always able to pull off a waiver deal even after the July 31st trading deadline and gets Kendrick from the Phillies. And he's... You know, you got him to be a bench piece, but they've had so many injuries, he's had to play a lot, mostly left field, even some right field that he had never played before, and 3 starts at second base. They can play there if they need him. He could play third. He's played first in the past for the Angels when he was there and even the Dodgers. So this is a guy who can play a lot of positions, give you a quality at bat. He has speed. He can run the bases. He can steal a base. You'd have potentially Jason Worth and Bryce Harper both back in the starting outfield for the postseason. Left and right, your top 2 pinch hitters would be Adam Lynn and Howie Kendrick. And I don't know how many clubs that have that kind of quality off the bench. You're probably putting putting Wilmer Difo in there as a switch hitter, and you'd have to pick from the other players left to how you fill out your bench, because it doesn't look like you're going to have Stephen Drew, and you don't know if you're going to have Brian Goodwin. But they have some opportunities. Some have even speculated whether they put their top prospect out there and add him to the roster at the age of 20 to go to the postseason. That would certainly be a gamble without much big league experience, certainly no playoff experience.
Yeah, Victor Robles, no question about it.
Yeah, Victor Robles.
I got to ask you this, Charlie. It seems hard to believe now, but the Nationals are now playing for the best record, and they're playing the Dodgers this weekend. How important is it to have the best record, or does it matter?
You know, I think players going back a month or two probably would say it's not that important, but then nobody thought you were going to have even be in the same zip code as the Dodgers to have a chance to try and catch them for best record. They lost a game in the standings yesterday. The Dodgers finally ended their losing streak, beating the Giants last night, and the Nationals lost their game with the Phillies. So at 4.5 games, it's, you know, they still probably, to have a great shot, I need to sweep the Dodgers to get that close over the final couple of weeks, have a chance to beat them out for the best record. What would it mean if you're playing a team in the West Coast, if you have the home field advantage, you only make 1 cross-country trip in that series? If you have to play more games, at the end, you're playing them in your home park. That's what it means more than anything. The Nationals, as far as a road team, they've been one of the best road teams in baseball. And if you end up playing the Dodgers, They've been the best home team in baseball up until this month. They were virtually invincible at Dodger Stadium. So I think, you know, all in all, you'd rather not travel as much. You'd rather play that team in your home park and have that last at bat, which is what we've said about home field advantage for years in baseball. That's what it means. Dusty Baker's not going to play or run anybody into the ground trying to beat out the Dodgers. But I know if you were to ask him the other day when his 92 wins for the Dodgers, 88 for the Nationals, he had a smile on his face because they're in shot of trying to do this.
Right, right. Charlie Slows, listen, thank you so much. You're one of the best, and we'll talk again.
You got it, Bill.
I saw the Reds recently, and I had a nice conversation with first baseman Joey Votto. He wants to stay with the Reds his entire career.
Joey Votto, thank you so much for being on the show. Joey, when I think of you, I call you the Ted Williams of the current era. And when I say that to you, what does that mean?
Oof, boy, that is much, much too generous.
It's true. It's a fact.
I don't know if it's factual, but it's certainly generous of you. So that's pretty much all I have to say.
Your on-base percentage, your discipline. How did you get the plate discipline?
I think it's just something that I've developed over time. You know, I feel that I think for any player, they have to feel as though there's a reward to being patient. And I think from a young age, I understood that there was good things that came out of passing the bat to the next guy.
I think this is your best season. Do you agree with that, and do you think you had better season?
I think by the end of the season, I'll feel that way, yeah.
And why? What made this any different than, your MVP year?
Well, I think probably the best year my strongest performance was 12, but that was cut short due to injury, mm-hmm. and I was very proud of 15. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still a ways to go. I try really hard not to get ahead of myself, so I'd like to finish off strong, and then maybe you and I can revisit that.
And also, what people don't talk about, defensively, you're one of the best, and talk about how much defense means to you.
You know, I've had my stretches where I just wasn't up to par, or I wasn't performing as well as I probably should have been. I was a little bit lax on the other side of the ball, mm-hmm. and you know, that really showed its head last year, and it's something that I've made a point to put a concerted effort into staying on in the off season, in spring training, and each and every day during the regular season. So that's something I take a ton of pride in.
The one thing I noticed about you, just talking to you for the first time, you seem so calm. Where do you get that calmness? I knew I wouldn't be calm.
In what way?
Just being calm at the plate, calm here as I'm talking to you.
A very smart woman once told me, "Still waters run deep."
Mm-hmm. Which was a song, by the way.
It's also a metaphor for my appearance of calm.
I hear you. Obviously, you're having a good year. The hitting has been here all year. But the team has not been competitive, and how disappointing has that been?
It's very disappointing. It's the reason why we throw our uniform on. I know that there's a individual side to it. I know that people care about the players individually and their performance historically or relative to their peers. Mm-hmm. But the fans come out to watch winning baseball, we're not providing that, but I would optimistically say that's trending towards going up. Sure.
Your contract doesn't expire until 2024. Are you patient enough to go through the rebuilding?
Yeah, I'm starting the process right now of lobbying for an extension. So I'm hoping for. I'm hoping to tack on another 4 years, round it out to 10, and then I'll have had 20 years of service time.
All with one team.
All with one team, happily. Well, I'll talk to Dick Williams and Walt and maybe Big Bob sometime in the fall, and we'll see if we can work on that extension.
I mean, how much does this team mean to you? Obviously, you signed that big extension. How much does it mean?
It's the only sports franchise I cheer for now,
and it's the only team I care about. And I'm trying to be a Bills fan. You know, it's a long process joining the Bills Mafia, but I think that once they let me in, that might be my second squad. But for now, Cincinnati, all the way.
I hear you. Final question. What's ahead for Joey Votto?
Oh, I tried to not get past this very moment. You know, I'm locked in on this conversation with you, happily, and then we go from there.
Joey Votto, thank you so much.
My next guest is Zach Cozart. Even though he's a free agent after the season, he has a warm spot for the Reds. Enjoy the podcast.
Zach Cozart, thank you so much for being on the show. Zach, I was looking at your stats, and the one thing that stuck out, the on-base percentage. It was way over 380. And why are you having your best year of your career?
Well, in spring training, I showed up, you know, with my normal batting stance that I've always had in my career. And it just didn't, for some reason, it wasn't feeling right. And I've seen guys around the league, including Joey, to where they'll rest their bat on their shoulder, and then Yadi does it too, to where they'll, and then, you know, go from there, you know, and it takes the whole thinking out of it. So I was like, I went to Don Long and Tony Jaramillo. I was like, what do you think about me just resting my bat on my shoulder and going from there? And they're like, hey, if it frees you up mentally, then let's try it. And then, you know, kind of the rest is history. It's felt pretty good.
It paid off because you became an all-star. How did it feel to become an all-star?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, you know, I've had some injuries in my career, and a bad knee injury 2 years ago, and, you know, 2 years later, I'm an all-star. So, you know, it just shows hard work pays off. You know, I try to get better every offseason, and it paid off this year.
When you had that injury, you slipped on first base, correct? And did you think you would come back the way you did?
You know, it was, for me, it was a little iffy at the time because it was such a traumatic injury. And, you know, the rehab was tough. You know, and I played the next year after only 9 months out of surgery. And, you know, I had my days where I just didn't feel good, you know. But coming into this year, I had a normal offseason, got strong. The knee's fully healed, so it felt a lot better.
Now, you've seen players slip on first base. Bryce Harper recently. Do you think anything should change regarding the bases?
I mean, that's a good question. I think it's, you know, since it's happened to me, every time I see a player lunge at a base, I kind of get a little, you know, pit in my stomach, even if nothing happens, because I know what can happen.
Right.
And the bases are raised, and, you know, there's that perfect storm, just like what happened with Bryce, with Adam Eaton. There's just, it's like, it's scary. And so, like, you know, to this day, when I'm running to first, you know, I'm concentrating on, I'm not lunging at this base. You know, I won't lunge. And it's just because of what happened to me. And so I don't know what they can do about it, but it could be something that would be, you know, good to look at.
How disappointing has it been? I mean, you have the hitting, but pitching has been down most of the year. How disappointing is it you guys couldn't compete?
Yeah, I mean, it's always disappointing when you don't win. You know, my first 3 years with the Reds, you know, we won the division. We were in the wild card. We were a good team. And, you know, and I don't want to lose sight of that with these young guys. We have a lot of young guys, a lot of guys out here that are getting their chance to prove what they can do up here. Some are taking advantage. Some are struggling a little bit, but that's what happens. And but I don't want this clubhouse to, you know, start, you know, being okay with losing, because that's not okay. We want to come out here and win every day, and hopefully these young guys understand that and aren't content with just being up here.
Dusty Baker was the first manager to give you a break. What does he mean to you, and he has a chance to maybe win his first World Series?
Yeah, I love Dusty. You know, he, like you said, he gave me my opportunity. He's a big-time players manager. He has the players' backs. And, you know, I think he's a great manager. I think that it's time for him. You know, he's got a great team over there. They got some good pitching. They got a really good lineup. And I think it's lining up for them to have a really good chance.
You become a free agent after this year. I'm just wondering, what's the plans? And also, how much winning will play a role?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of weird knowing that I'm going to go into the off season, you know, not necessarily affiliated with any team or the Reds, and we'll see how it goes. You know, I want to win. That's for sure. That's a big thing. You know, you don't get to play this game too often, too long. and it goes by fast. And, you know, I got a good taste of winning early in my career, and it hadn't been that way the last 3 years. So, you know, I wanna definitely be on a squad that, you know, has a chance to compete for a championship.
How much do you want to help your family?
A lot, yeah. That's, you know, there's so many things that go into, you know, the situation I am right now, you know, with my baseball career, and then you want to, you know, help your family out and secure, you know, for the rest of your life. And so there's just so much that you think about, and you want to help out. So yeah, it's a kind of a nervous and a cool time in your career, because you don't know what's going to happen, but you hope for the best.
Talking to you, I get the impression there's a soft spot for the Reds, and why?
Yeah, I mean, I've been with them my whole career. You know, I love the city. My family loves the city. You know, I like the group of guys. I think we have a great group of guys that work hard. And, you know, it's all I know. You know, and I would hope that, you know, this offseason there might be some talks, you know, with the Reds again. Who knows? And I hope that they're, you know, trying to turn the corner and get over the rebuild and try to start winning. And that'll be a big decision.
Has there been talks in the beginning?
There's been conversation, nothing real serious. It's just, you know, kind of seeing where we're at. And, you know, at this point, you know, I love the Reds. You know, I'm 3 weeks away from free agency, and we'll see what happens.
Zach Cozart, thank you so much.
You got it.
My final guest is Scooter Gennett, and he explains why he's having his best season of his career.
Scooter Gennett, thank you so much for being on the show. You're having a career year, and I have to ask, why?
Well, I think it's a number of things. This offseason, I changed my workout program. I used to go early in the morning to you know, a gym or whatnot with a group of guys and work out. And I just figured out that wasn't best for me. So I actually worked out with my cousin. He used to play baseball, and he's a trainer now. Mm-hmm. And he would come over after he was done teaching. And we would work out from about 5 o'clock till basically sundown. So I think that helped out a lot. I was able to have the time to, you know, really focus on those, you know, fine tune some muscles and areas where I think I needed to really strengthen. And so from a physical standpoint, I think that was more beneficial for me. Mm-hmm. And then also just mentally coming into spring training this year, I just, knowing that I was stronger and that I've, you know, cleaned up some of the areas physically that I needed to, that I didn't need to really do too much, and I could just go out there and play and be relaxed and you know, kind of let things happen. And I think those two things, and also the more you play at this level, the more you learn about, you know, consistently putting yourself in a position to have success and learning more about yourself and what you can do, what you can't do, and incorporating that into an approach, you know. And that's really just been a simple approach for me. Just be relaxed and try to swing at good pitches, and it's ended up working out.
The home runs are up. Now, you always had power, but are you surprised by the home run total?
No, I always thought that I could, you know, hit home runs. But like I said, when you're not swinging at good pitches, you're not putting yourself in good counts to get good pitches to hit, good pitches to drive on a consistent basis. And that's all I've been trying to do this year. And I did it quite a bit last year, up to when I hurt my oblique. It was the first time I had an oblique strain. And coming back from that about a month, I still wasn't right. So, you know, and I still hit around 14 home runs. So if you take that month out of the equation and add in a, you know, an average month, and probably around 20 home runs too last year, and that was a big step for me is just swinging at good pitches. My walk total went up this year. You know, my walks are still up from you know, 13, 14, and 15. So you incorporate that into just into consistently having the same mindset. I think that's those home runs are a result of that, and learning just from guys on the team, like Joey, kind of picking his brain and watching him on a consistent basis. He doesn't give any at-bats away. He doesn't swing at that pitch that's borderline, that pitcher's pitch. He waits it out and realizes that he's good enough to handle himself with two strikes, and that's something I incorporated too.
What is it like to have Joey Votto on the team, and how much has the Reds make you relax?
I mean, Joey's a huge asset, not only what he can do, you know, personally for himself and contributing for the team, but also just being there for the younger guys and even guys that have been around a little bit. He's one of the best hitters in the game, if not the best. So whenever you have a guy like that, it's important to take advantage of that time, you know, that you could have just talking to him about some little stuff and the knowledge that he has for the game is you know, unbelievable. He thinks about things that I've never thought about before. So when you can take a little bit from this guy or that guy and kind of incorporate it into what you're trying to do, through whether it's preparation or approach-wise in the game. I think if you're not doing those things, if you're not trying to pick people's brains, and you're really not trying to get better, and that's when you should be alarmed. So that's all I try to do each day is just get better and learn and ultimately try to come up with a you know, pregame routine and also a routine on the on-deck circle, and then when I get in the box, just let things happen.
What has Joey taught you the most?
I would say just about what pitchers are trying to do to left-handed hitters or whoever it is. He looks at how they are trying to attack him and also where their mistakes are, which is something I never really thought of. Like, I always thought of, okay, what's this guy trying to do to me to get me out? But if he doesn't accomplish what he's trying to do, where are his mistakes and where do they miss over the plate and kind of target that area? Because ultimately, if they execute exactly what they want to do, it's going to be, you know, something that is going against our strength and maybe a pitch that we can't really handle. So why would we try to hit that pitch? You know, let's think about where they're making their mistakes and capitalize on those. And that's really what hitting is capitalizing on mistakes. Very rarely do you see a guy, a pitcher hit his spot perfectly and then the guy hits a home run. Usually they miss out over the plate or they miss up and in, whatever it is. And that's where you really take advantage of them.
What about the Reds? How much have they made you relax?
Well, it's not like a team makes you relax. It's up to you. It's up to you to learn about yourself and realize that, you know, it's a game of failure. You can't put too much pressure on yourself. It's a lot harder for younger players. Now I've established myself a little bit over the last few years, but young guys come up and they want to stay up here. They want to perform. They want to have a good game when they get their first start, and that's just a tough way to play the game. It's a lot easier said than done, but ideally you want to go out there and just let things happen, let things evolve naturally, and that's very tough to do. But the guys that you know, establish yourself and, you know, financially get some security to go out there and just be like, you know what, I'll be good to go. I can go out there and play and just enjoy it. And that's where you really start seeing those spikes in numbers and the success starts happening. And that's the kind of the position I'm in now. When I signed, you know, my arbitration, my pre-arbitration deal with the Brewers, I realized, you know what, like, I'll be all right. You know, if I go out and hit 100, you know, I'm going to be just fine with the money I'm going to make this year. And that takes a lot of pressure off, especially when you're not that first round guy coming up to the big leagues with a lot of money in the bank. It's, you know, it's tough. So knowing that, you know, if you know, it doesn't work out that well at the big league level and I'm done playing, I'll be all right. It actually helped a lot. So
you'll be all right.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely helped. And then when I got picked up by the Reds, when the Brewers let me go, I came into a position where I was in a utility role off the bench. And all I did was take that as a challenge and coming in every day prepared to play whatever position. And that took a lot of my mind off of the offensive side. And you know, whenever you can keep yourself busy and motivated to do different things rather than just one little area, the less you overthink it. And I think that helped. But ultimately, man, it's just trusting in my abilities and my blessings, you know, and just letting those things happen. And it's a lot easier said than done. It doesn't happen every day, but if that's your mindset, for me, that's my mindset, my goal. So I'm just doing it more consistently, and it's been working out.
Do you look at the four home runs as the turning point of your career?
Obviously, it's probably the highlight so far of my career, but a turning point for my confidence and stuff like that, no. I would say a few more people might have learned who I was and heard my name for the first time.
You became a popular figure in Cincinnati.
Right, right. And you know, with that being said, I would say on that end, you know, it was a turning point. But for me personally, it was obviously a great night, a great experience. But I just looked at it like, man, like I'm extremely blessed to have the opportunity to do that. But at the same time, I realized that, hey, it's a game of failure. I might go for 5 tomorrow with 5 strikeouts. So I didn't think too much into it. But it's nice to know that hard work does pay off. And it's also important for me to realize how thankful I am to have the opportunity to play every day and to just be in the big leagues playing for a team I always dreamed about playing.
Scooter, thank you so much.
Absolutely.